Welcome to Torat Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Michelle Levine, and today we are studying Perek Chet, Chapter 8 of the Book of Daniel. In this chapter, Daniel has yet another vision about the future world kingdoms, which follows from his previous vision in Chapter 7. As noted in verse 1, Bishnat Shalot Lemalchut Belshazzar HaMelech, Chazon Nir'ah Elai, Ani Daniel, Achare HaNir'ah Elai Batchila. In the third year of the kingship of Belshazzar the king, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, following what was shown to me earlier. As Abal Benel explains, this vision now clarifies, especially about the second and third kingdoms, their identities, fates, and their impact on the Jews, details which were not explained in the angel's interpretation of Daniel's first vision in chapter 7. In particular, Daniel will envision about the Median, Persian, and Greek empires, which will be explicitly named in the angel's interpretation of this vision. Therefore, since the focus is no longer on Babylonia, the language of this chapter switches back to Hebrew, as this vision is a private communication to Daniel. Furthermore, additional cryptic numbers alluding to the time of the end will be stipulated. As noted in verse 2, this vision takes place while Daniel is in Shushan, the capital, in the province of Elam, at the river of Ulai. Commentators question if Daniel is actually in this geographic location or only envisioning he is there as part of this vision. Significantly, this vision takes place at Shushan, when it is not yet designated as a capital, which only occurs during the time of Ahasuerus, king of Persia. However, as Malbim posits, this location for the vision signals that eventually Persia will take over the Babylonian Empire. That this vision takes place at a river is appropriate, since our sages explain in Midrash Michilta, Introduction to Parashat Bo, a divine communication outside of the land of Israel must be at a pure place, such as at a body of water. This chapter divides into two major sections, structured similarly like chapter 7. Thus, verses 3 through 14 relay the vision subdivided into two parts. Verses 3 through 12 describe the vision of two battling animals, a ram and a male goat, and the consequent impact of their battles on the land of Israel and the Jews. While verses 13 through 14 describe Daniel overhearing the angelic beings questioning how long the Jews will suffer at the hands of these marauding kingdoms, with the obscure answer given in ambiguous numbers. In verse 15, Daniel asks for understanding, and he is informed he will gain perspective and insight from the angel Gabriel as related in verse 16. In verse 17, Daniel is informed by the angel that this vision is meant for the time of the end, 8 cates. While Daniel is at first overwhelmed by the angel's presence and he falls asleep with his face to the ground as related in verse 18, the angel approaches him and sets him upright, and then informs Daniel in verse 19 that he will reveal to him et asher yeyeh b'acharit ha-za'am ki lemo'ed ketz, what will take place at the end of this wrath, for it belongs to the appointed time of the end. Accordingly, the rest of the chapter, verses 20 through 26, records the angel's explanations of what Daniel had perceived in his vision. Daniel is so overcome by the extraordinary revelations about world history and Israel's plight until messianic times, which are divulged to Daniel that this will happen only after a long period of time, as noted in verse 26, Liamim Rabim, that it deeply affects him in his entire being. As the last verse of this chapter, verse 27, relates, Va'ani Daniel niyeti v'nechleti yamim, va'akum v'ese et melechet ha-melech, Va'eshtomem al hamar'eh ve'ein mevin. And I, Daniel, was disheartened and became sick for days, until I rose up and did the king's business. And I was absorbed, thinking about the vision, and found no one to explain it. How does Daniel envision about the second and third empires in this vision? And what additional information is provided to him about their fates and how they impact the Jews under their dominions? Once again, the image of beasts is employed symbolically to represent the kingdoms. But this time, they are two domestic animals, a ram and a male goat. In verses 3 through 4, Daniel sees a ram standing by the stream. V'hine ayel echad omed lifnei ha'uval. And it has two tall horns, but one horn is higher than the other horn, and the higher one rises up last. This ram is goring, menageach yama v'tzafona v'negba, toward the west, north, and south, and no beasts can prevail before it, so that this ram accomplishes according to his will and becomes great. V'asa chirtzono v'higdil. As the vision progresses, Daniel then perceives in verses 5 through 7 how a male goat, Sfir Ha'izim, comes from the west, running across the face of the earth, and it did not touch the ground, apparently, as Sa'adya Gaon explains, because of the velocity of its running. Now this goat had one conspicuous horn between its eyes. This goat charges the ram with great ferocity, breaking its two horns, throwing the ram to the ground, trampling it, and the ram has no means to rescue itself. At the beginning of verse 8, however, we learn that at the zenith of its power, the male goat's big horn breaks, and in its place rise four horns toward the four winds of the heaven. וכעוצמו נשברה הקרן הגדולה, ותעלנה חזות ארבע תחתיה, לארבע רוחות השמיים. Then in verses 9 through 12, Daniel sees that from one of the horns rose a small horn, which grew to all directions, to the south and east, and as well, ve'el hatzevi, to the beautiful land, that is the land of Israel. This small horn is so powerful, it is described in verse 10 as having the power to throw the stars to the ground and trample them. And in verse 11, it is described as aggrandizing itself, even to Sar HaTzava, the master of the host. And because of this little horn, the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the place of his sanctuary is cast down. Umimenu huram hatamid, v'ushlach mechon mikdasho. Yet, as verse 12 reports, there will be a set time for the cessation of the daily sacrifice, which will be replaced by idolatry, even though, during this time, truth will be cast to the ground and the enemy will succeed and prosper. V'tzavat tinaten al hatamid b'fesha, v'tashlech emet arza, v'aseta v'hitzlicha. In verses 13 through 14, Daniel overhears a conversation between the angelic beings questioning, Ad matai hechazon atamid, v'hapesha shomeim tet, v'kodesh v'tzava mirmas. For how long is the vision of the daily sacrifice and the sin and the desolation and the trampling of the sanctuary and the host? The answer? Al erev boker, alpaim ushlosh meot, v'nitzdak kodesh. Until evening, morning, 2300, and then the Holy One will be purified and prosper. As the angel reveals in verses 20 through 22, this vision intends to clarify about two kingdoms that succeed Babylonia. The ram with the two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. As Mitzudat David elaborates, therefore, the higher horn that rises last is that of Persia, which was greater than Media. That the vision does not refer to Persia coming eastward, but only from the other three directions, is because Persia originates from the east. The angel then identifies the male goat as Greece, with the large horn between its eyes identified as the first king. As commentators have fathomed, this king refers to Alexander the Great of Macedonia, who conquered many dominions swiftly and took over the Persian Empire in 330 BCE. The horn between his eyes symbolizes to Malbim that Alexander the Great had great wisdom in order to accomplish so much in so short a time span. That the goat's large horn breaks into four horns signals that four kingdoms, kingships, will take its place, but not by its power, for this first king will no longer prevail, as noted in verse 22. This is interpreted by Malbim and other commentators to refer to Alexander the Great's early demise soon after he conquers his empire at the age of 32, resulting in a series of civil wars among his generals, called the Wars of the Diadochi, to determine his successor. In the end, his empire was divided into four major rulerships, the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt, the Seleucid Kingdom of Syria and the East, and much of the former Persian Empire, the Attalid Kingdom of Pergamum in Asia, and Antigonid Kingdom in Macedonia, controlling also parts of Greece. The question then arises as to the identification of the small, powerful horn that Daniel envisioned in verses 9 through 12. The angel interprets obtusely in verse 23, Uva'acharit malchutam kehatem haposhe'im ya'amod melech azpanim umevin chidot. And at the end of their reign, when transgressions reach their full, an impudent king will arise who understands stratagems. This king is described in verses 24 through 25 as using deceit and other stratagems to achieve his goals, among them to cause destruction of Am Kedoshim, the holy people, that is the Jews. He will become arrogant and stand up against Sar HaSarim, the Lord of Lords, that is Hashem. But in the end, without effort, he will be broken. Uve'efes yad yishaver. According to Avraham Ibn Ezra's reading, the little horn refers to the Greek king, Antiochus IV Epiphanes, of Hanukkah infamy. In his view, verses 9 through 12 describe the Jewish persecutions under this king's rule, when he will abolish the daily sacrifice and desecrate the temple for idolatrous purposes, causing the truth, that is the Torah, to be thrown down in his decrees against fulfilling the mitzvot. Therefore, while Ibn Ezra opposes messianic speculation, where a cryptic time frame refers to a past historical event, then he will decode the number's relevance. In this context, Ibn Ezra interprets that the angel is asked how long will Antiochus, the fourth Epiphanes, continue to place idols in the second temple. The answer that is given in verse 14 is evening, morning, 2300. On this basis, Ibn Ezra interprets this time period refers to 2300 days, corresponding to the 6 years and about 4 months of persecution under Antiochus IV, recorded in the Book of the Maccabees. This literal reading of 2300 days is corroborated when the angel says in verse 26, "And the vision that lasts the evening and the morning which was told is true. As for you, retain the vision and seal it, for it is for many days." That this vision of evening, morning is truth, signals to Ibn Ezra that the truth of this vision lies in its literal interpretation, referring to 2300 days. Therefore, the brazen king, noted in verse 23, is identified as Antiochus. And when the wrath of the Greek rulership has expired, then Venitzdak Kodesh, the Hasmoneans, will purify the temple and it will be rectified. Historically, in 170 BCE, the former high priest Onias III is murdered at the insistence of the wicked high priest Menelaus, who was appointed by Antiochus. In 169 BCE, Antiochus murders Jews and loots the temple, as noted in the Book of the Maccabees. Persecution continues and climaxes in 167 BCE, when the altar to Zeus is placed in the temple. In 164 BCE, the temple was rededicated. This is celebrated by the holiday of Hanukkah. In light of this presumption that the small horn refers to the Greek kingdom in the time of Antiochus, Malbim explains that when verse 10 relates that it grew so powerful until it trampled the stars in the heaven, this refers metaphorically to the Jews, whose religious beliefs he wanted to trample, and to the righteous, who sacrificed their lives during these difficult times. Accordingly, when verse 11 recounted that this will continue until the Sar HaTzavah, that is, Matityahu and his priestly sons, will eventually prevail over the Greek persecution. Other commentators, however, maintain that this aspect of Daniel's vision moves on to allude to the final fourth kingdom, that of Rome. In this regard, commentators observe the angel is referring to a long period of time in his statements, and this cannot refer to the time span of merely 6+ years. Therefore, as Yosef Ibn Yahya explains, when the angel claims he will inform Daniel of the end of the wrath, Acharit HaZa'am, this refers to the final exile, which has been determined to have an appointed time for the end, Kilamoed Ketz. Thus, according to Rashi and Nachmanides Ramban, the small horn is Titus, and verses 9 through 12 describe Titus's campaign against the Jews with the cessation of the temple sacrifices, as noted in verse 11, leading up to the destruction of the second temple. This parallels the analysis of the little horn noted in Daniel's first vision in chapter 7, verse 8. The toppling of the truth, noted in verse 12, refers to the destruction of the second temple, which halted Torah learning. Ramban further clarifies that according to the reading, that Rome is an offshoot genealogically of the Greek kingdom, as we had noted in our study of chapter 2, then it makes sense how Rome would be described as a small horn that emerges from one of the four horns that represented the divisions of the Greek empire after the death of Alexander the Great. During Titus's tragic successes, wherein, as Rashi explains, he will cause great suffering to the holy nation, as related in verse 23, and will speak blasphemously against the Lord of the Lords, that is Hashem, as related in verse 25, nonetheless, this verse continues, he shall be broken without effort. As the Gemara in Masechet Gittin 56b relates, he was destroyed by a mosquito that entered his nose and traveled to his brain. On the other hand, as noted by Rav Shabtai Weiss in his wonderful Sefer on the Book of Daniel, Sefer Mishpitzot Zahav, those commentators who assign the Fourth Empire to be that of Islam would interpret the small horn as the Muslims. And while there is no integral connection between Greece and the Muslim Empire, nevertheless, from the areas of the Greek Empire, the Muslims became strong. And they are the small horn that is referred to as emerging brazenly from among the others and persecuting the Jews until the coming of the Mashiach. In light of these readings, there are commentators who maintain that the ambiguous number 2300, evening, morning, alludes to a date for redemption. Their calculations are quite involved, but to give one example, Avraham Balchia, who wrote his messianic work, Megillat HaMegale, in the 12th century, presumes the numerical value of 2300 refers to years, not days, and he decodes that this interval refers to the time from the building of the first temple until the conclusion of the exile. The metaphoric response of until evening, morning, incorporates these two time spans, the morning of Israel's dominion during the temple periods and the evening of its exiles. Consequently, following the chronology of the 2nd century CE Hebrew chronological work Seder Olam Rabbah, compiled by Babylonian Talmudists, Balchia counts 2300 years from the building of the first temple in 2928, which leads us to the redemption date of 5228 or 1468 CE. He also posits that if one calculates from the time that King David initiated the building of the temple 20 years earlier, then the redemption will arrive in 5208, that is 1448 CE. As we are aware, this date and others that are calculated by the commentators, which we will discuss in our study of chapter 12, have long passed, unfortunately. Nevertheless, we continue to hope and daven for the anticipated redemption, for it has been promised. The Kates will arrive, and we must continue to await its arrival with emunah and trust in Hashem and his divine plan for the future destiny of our people. This shiur is dedicated by Arlene and Arthur Ice and Michelle and Dov Schwartz and families. Le'ilui Nishmat, our beloved and much missed father, William T. Steinlauf, Tritel Ze'ev Ben Baruch, on his 25th yahrzeit. His love of Hashem, Torah, community, and family has served us as an inspiration and guide for his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.